Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, been saying.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. This is a special edition with the Duck South Tips and Tactics podcast. Today, I'm with one of my favorite guys in the world, Mr. Daniel Kubeka. What's up, man?
What's going on, man? It's been a while.
Look, I know we said we had to, let me just let the audience in on a little something. When Daniel and I usually get on the phone together, we usually spend about 2 hours talking. Daniel is my...
if not more.
Look, today we are going to be talking about something that is right around the corner, and I couldn't ask for a better expert to be on the podcast with me than Daniel. We're going to be talking about blue-winged teal.
It is right around the corner. We got 9-10 days away. We open on the 15th for everybody. So it's getting here. So
for those of you that are new to the podcast that weren't here in some of the older podcasts, Daniel Lull is co-owner of Run and Gun Adventures down in South Texas. Does fishing trips, duck hunting trips. I can't wait for my trip down there.
Yeah, I know. I keep trying to get you and Ramsey over here. Y'all need to come on with it. We're looking forward to this year. It's not only teal, but also big duck. But man, we've got some things that are looking really, really good this year for us here in teal. You know, a lot of guys hunt teal in a lot of different ways, but
you're looking a lot better than you were this time last year for teal season, because at this point last year, man, you're trying to herd cows to higher ground. I remember videos being online.
No, it's changed. We're not getting as near as much rain as we had last year, but we are getting some. We've had anywhere from, man, depending where you are right now, anywhere from probably 3 to 11 inches. Some guys have even had upwards of 12 in our area the last 3 to 5 days. We didn't get hit like, you know, that Louisiana. I'm guessing Mississippi got it too, some with that. That was a hurricane or came in as a tropical storm that came in a couple of days ago. But we've got over. Every morning we get bands that come in off the Gulf, and if you're underneath one of them, and that's what we're doing right now. We're actually got 2 or 3 different water patrol parties out checking overflow trucks, checking flow out, trying to catch as much free water as we can, but also hold the water that we'd already pumped. This we could have done without the rain. We had already pumped almost everything up, and we're relifting water. And we were sitting pretty. This rain's not hurting us, especially if it stops here pretty quick. But it definitely, if it keeps coming, is going to spread these birds out once they do.
Well, talking about conditions, I mean, conditions are a lot more favorable for you this year, because after the hurricane that hit Texas last year, man, y'all had it rough during teal season. It calmed down some, you know, after it opened. But this year's looking lot more favorable.
We're looking good. A lot of our guys, farmers, have gotten all their rice harvested. We still have a few of them that are still still trying to get, you know, get grain out of the field right now. They're playing this weather. But we're in a lot better position than what we were last year at this time. You know, obviously we don't have 40 inches of rain that we're fighting. Like I said, it's the food sources are going to be there this year. A lot of guys are going to get help with this rain, though, as far as their ponds are going to get made for them. There's going to be a lot of food and a lot of habitat, you know, here on the Texas Gulf Coast when those birds start arriving. We've had a few birds already show up, but not near what's on its way.
All right, let's talk a little science behind the blue-winged teal, because I think that a lot of people don't understand the science about a blue-winged teal. A blue-winged teal is, you don't have to get on to me when I say this, but they're photo migrators. They migrate on the length of the day, and that's why they're we can time blue-winged teal so well. Yep. It's because they're migrating on the length of the day, and they leave every year at a certain 2 or 3 week period there, because that length of the day is the same every year at that same time.
Yep. Yes, sir. And also, too, we're also going to be pushing around the way the season sets up this year. We're going to be coming on to a full moon almost the entirety of the season. If I look at the calendar, right, I believe our full moon is in the middle of our second week. Teal season only lasts 16 days. So our actual full moon comes about, I guess, 5 days before season ends. So as those birds are all moving on the front side of that full moon, we're basically going to be almost in a migration the entire teal season, which you're hunting migrating birds. All our birds that are coming through these teal, they're on their way, you know, farther south. And so hunting it, having the season where they're almost always during the migration, is going to make it where everyone's always going to be having new birds. And they're continuously going to be moving. Whereas last year, we had a hurricane, we also had the full moon was more towards the front side of the season, I think it was like right smack dab in the middle. And so that last week, you know, birds, I won't say they got stale, but we didn't have anything moving new birds in. This year, the way it's set up with our full moon and the season, I think it's going to be set up great. Now, everybody's already asking us, man, have y'all seen a bunch? No, we're not seeing a bunch yet, but we really didn't want to start seeing a bunch of birds until the 7th or 8th, which is tomorrow and the next day, because any birds that were already down here, those birds are going to be long gone before season actually starts. And that's what I think a lot of people, they make you feel good. You see them, but it doesn't do you any good when they're gone, you know, whenever season starts.
I think the other thing that, look, that I learned from you and Ramsey is, and I can say this, that I learned this from you and Ramsey, okay? I want you to picture in your mind as you listen to this, the blue-winged teal coming down the Mississippi Flyway, and they do, they spread out into Arkansas, Tennessee, Mississippi, Louisiana. But I will say this, that area that Daniel is in, if you picture these teals coming down the flyway, they come south and then they head west. And Daniel, where he is one of the last stopping points for the blue-winged teal as they work into Mexico.
Yep. They bottleneck through us on their way south. We're good. We get all of them bottleneck right through us on the Texas Gulf Coast and fly the coastline, you know, as they make their final, you know, route into Mexico. And that's why our teal seasons are so good consistently. It's some of the most consistent hunting that we have year in and year out is our teal season, because so many birds are basically they're bottlenecking through us.
They may spread out in the southern part of this flyway. I mean, they may spread out into Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Louisiana, Arkansas, Missouri, whatever. But when they hit that coastline, they fly that coastline, and that is the last point that they go to before going over into Mexico.
That's why we love it. go ahead.
No, I look, now that we got the science part of this out of the way, and I got you here, one of the experts of blue-winged teal hunting, we would not do this podcast any justice if we didn't talk some strategies.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Let's talk decoying first. Let's talk decoys. You know, what you guys do to be successful as far as with your decoys. Number of decoys, spinning wing decoys, all of that.
It all is going to vary depending on the size of water that we're hunting. I would say the least amount of decoys that any of my guys are going to take into the field with them to actually throw is going to be 4 to 6 dozen, and then they're going to have at least 2 or 3 mojos with them as well. And then on our bigger water, when they're hunting 20, 30, 40 acres, they're going to run at least 8 dozen decoys, sometimes up to 12. And most of the time when they're hunting big, big water like that, they're going to go on and mix in a dozen or two pintails in there as well. And then they may bump those mojos up to, you know, 4 to 6 of them. You can go overkill on your mojos, but we're trying to finish birds. These birds haven't seen decoys. Most of them haven't seen decoys at all. You know, it's not like ducks that have, you know, been getting hunted in Canada. You know, most of these birds haven't seen decoys. If they have, it's very, very minimal. And our whole goal is to finish these birds feet down in the decoys. We're going to let them work. And we're trying to have, you know, big volleys. Yeah, they're going to let them circle an extra time or two and try to get them, like I said, feet down, fully committed. We're not trying to hunt them and shoot them. We're trying to hunt decoying birds that are finishing. We're not running a teal hunt like it's a dove hunt where, hey, guys, it's the Wild West. Let's just shoot as they fly by. We're actually trying to put those birds feet down in the customer's lap because, as most people know, they're fast. So the slowest point they are is when they're trying to land. So they're a lot easier for customers to hit.
And these spinning wing decoys can do a lot. These teal, I tell you, I was talking to a guy the other day, Jeff Estes. We were talking about it. I said, man, there's going to be a lot of sad people when the teal become decoy shy of these spinning wing decoys.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Man.
On
a spinning wing decoy for blue wing teal, do you prefer one that you can cut on and off with the remote or just one that's just constantly running?
Ours is constantly running because most of our teal hunts don't last. They don't last near as long as a regular hunt does. You know, and most of the time we're only using our spinning decoys during teal season, and that's it. We very rarely pull them out during regular season. Or in the special circumstances where we have absolutely zero wind, or if we're going to use them inside of a goose spread, you know, to shoot pintails first thing in the morning, and then we're going to pull them down. But our mojos get 95% of their use during teal season, and then they may sit in the storage shed until the following, you know, teal season again. And so we leave ours on, and each one of my guys has a different confidence deal on how many they're going to run, if they spread them out across the spread, if they stack them in together. You know, some days, you know, the birds aren't finishing just right, they'll move them around. You know, I guess the biggest thing that we try to tell our guys, and they've gotten really good at it over the years, is especially since the teal hunt, they bumped it back from up to 6 from 4, is you got to look at a teal hunt like it's a duck hunt. It's not, oh, we're just going teal hunt. Let me get 2 dozen decoys and 1 spinner. We're going to set up a dove stool, not take any cover, and we're just going to shoot our teal. We look at it. We have our guys look at it and treat it like it is just like it's a big duck hunt, a regular season hunt. You know, they're taking all their cover in. They're running, you know, I'd say bigger spreads than probably most people do. Regular season spreads. And going in and treating it, they're scouting just like regular birds or during the season. Scouting is setting up where these birds want to be.
I cannot believe that I actually just sat there and put decoys first when I knew that scouting was number one on my list, because the thing about a blue-winged teal is if you they're here today, gone tomorrow. But if you find a place with some teal, man, you get in there and kill them.
Yeah, they're migrating. If you're not, hunting teal is the biggest difference that I would say there is between teal and resident season is during teal season, you're killing them. You're hunting them where they are. You better go. It's the only time of the year where we may hunt the same pond consecutive days. There'll be some ponds that get hot that we may hunt 10 or 12 times, whereas there may be a pond that we pump up, we may not hunt one time. Whereas on regular season, you're managing birds. You know, we're a little different than most people. We're hunting wintering birds in regular season, so we're having to manage the birds that we have because we're not hunting migrators like most people are. Whereas in teal season, we're hunting migrators like everybody else. So where they are, where you see them in the afternoon, you better go back to them, you know, because those birds aren't guaranteed they're going to be here in 2 or 3 days. Whether you hunt them or not, they're leaving. They're migrating through. It's not like, oh, we pressured them out. Yeah, you can pressure them off a pond, but they're going to migrate whether you put pressure on them or not. So if you got them, you better go kill them.
Oh, heck yeah. And hey, I'll add a little funny story to this real quick. I'll tell you, one of the most active times that I see federal game wardens is during teal season, during blue wing teal season. So let me tell you this story from teal season a few years ago. You know, with concentrations of water during teal season, it concentrates the game wardens too. I think the feds have been flying over the state of Mississippi for a couple of weeks, and this is the only spot that they could find some teal. So it kind of concentrated those game wardens in there. Anyway, the guys that were hunting this hole, they had ridden by the state game warden's house that morning. I guess in the back of their mind, they may have been going to do something wrong because they checked to make sure that he was at home. They knew it was going to be a good hunt that day. But anyway, they got to the hole. You know, it was quick. I mean, they had shot their teal down really fast. And one of them jumped up. Whoa, we got to get a count. You know how it is, right at daylight, they're coming in really, really hard, really fast. 6 or 8 of them, and this is back when the limit was 4. But anyway, they had knocked all their teal down, and one of them, whoa, we need to get a count, see how many we got. And the other one stood up, oh, don't worry about it, we went by the game warden's house this morning, his fat ass is at the gas station eating a biscuit this morning. Little did they know that game warden was laying in the grass about 50 yards away with the federal game warden that he had ridden in with, filming and watching everything. I'm going to say that they got a ticket. Like I said, I'm going to tell who it is, but I suspect after you call the game warden a fat ass, you're probably going to get they're going to find something wrong with you. I know of a place that, you know, the whole Mississippi Delta didn't have any teal but one spot. And I guess the feds had encircled this on a map, and they got out there real early the night before, and they were just going to get in there and see what was going on. They hid out, and the guys that were hunting said, man, we better slow down killing these teal, get a good count on them, see where we're at, and one of the guys piped up and said, oh, man, don't worry about the game warden. His fat ass is still in the bed. And little did they know, the game warden's laying about 25 yards in the grass from them. I could tell a lot more details to that story, but it would totally give it away. So I'm leaving it alone.
There you go. There you go.
But
no,
hey,
it's a fun time because it's the first time most of us are, you know, not only clients, but also the guys that we've been working so hard, we're getting to pull the trigger. I mean, some guys have already, we've been running dove hunts, but as far as actual the waterfowl where all the work is put in, it's kind of that rewarding time. Like right now we're out checking water, but we're seeing birds, and it's like, okay, you're getting to see the game plan, you know, all the work, all the off season, all the sweat and all that. It's starting to actually take sight, and it's a very, very rewarding and fun time. And teal season's a sprint. It's a 16-day, you know, hunt every day, kill them while you got them, a sprint, you know, whereas in comparison to big duck season, it's more of a, you know, we consider it more of a marathon.
That's a great way of putting it.
It's a good time. You know, it's everybody gets to get back into the groove of things.
Hey, Daniel, let me ask you this. What on calling techniques, just for some guys that's listening to this podcast, what are some different things that you do as far as, you know, when you're teal hunting, your calling techniques, you know, when to call, how to call? Well, what's some different things that y'all do that make you successful?
The way I always, my guys like to be kind of loud, but the way what I tell most people, because when clients ask me, I mean, when they're coming at you, they're committed. The only thing you can do with that call is scare them off. You know, once you get them headed in your direction and they're zoned in, I mean, you may hit them here and there just to keep them zoned in on you. But once you get them locked in, don't just keep wailing on it. You know, and each hunt's different. Each day is different. Birds act differently. Some days, you know, you have to stay on them the entire time all the way until you take your mouth off the call to yell, take them. Other times, you can be a lot quieter and accomplish. A lot of it's reading, and it's easier for us to read them because, like I said, most of us are hunting all 16 days. So every day we can tell an easy difference from day to day, whereas a guy that's only hunting three or four times throughout the season, you know, he's not seeing the difference from day one through day five, whereas the guy that hunted every one of those days is like, man, the birds we got in now are, you know, little call shy or what have you. I've never had really any issue on teal. They don't seem to get as call shy as, you know, big birds do during regular season. Just because, like I said, most of these birds haven't even seen a decoy yet by the time people start hunting them. You know, they're virgin birds. And so usually
I think you hit it right on the head when you said reading the body language. Man, you can hit a call on a blue winged teal and as soon as that sound hits them, buddy, they flip.
Oh, they're coming. Yeah, and so once you get them in, it's not a – most of the time you don't stay on them constant. But there are some times where I don't know what it is. They just want to be talked to, and you just got to stay on them until literally you drop the call to, you know, tell your guys to take them. But, like I said, it's reading them. You know, that's – I guess the biggest mistake that I see that most people make in regards to teal hunting is they go, oh, it's just teal hunting. Well, yeah, it is just teal hunting, but it's a duck, and it's you know you've got to put your time and your effort in and treat it. The guys that treat it like a hunt, like I would call a regular season hunt, seem to have a lot more success than the guys that look at it. Oh, it's just a teal hunt. It's just teal. We're gonna take 2 dozen decoys and a mojo and dovetails, and we're gonna kill them. Yeah, you might, but day in and day out, your guys that take it, I'll say, a little more serious. Put a little more time and effort into there, throw a few more decoys. I'm not saying throw the whole kitchen sink at them by any means, but I just feel like that's the biggest thing I hear from guys is like, man, it's just teal. Why are y'all throwing so many decoys? Why do y'all have 8 dozen decoys hanging? Why do you have 4 mojos? Well, man, it depends what kind of water you're hunting. Yeah, if you're hunting a 2-acre rice hole, yeah, you only need 4 or 5 dozen decoys and, you know, a mojo or two. But when you're hunting a 30 or 40 acre pond, you know, a bigger flat of water, your 2 dozen decoys and a mojo aren't going to do much. And so that would be, I guess, my biggest tip to guys outside of the scouting is treat it like it's a regular duck hunt. Don't look at it as, oh, it's just teal. We'll get there 5 minutes before shooting time, throw our 2 dozen decoys and a 1 mojo. And call it good. Could you get away with it? Yeah. You'd never get away with that in big duck season, though. So, guys, to treat it like it's a regular hunt, you're going to have more success and consistency than the whole, oh, it's just a teal hunt.
No, I agree with that. I fully agree with that. A couple of small things. Hey, Daniel, I want you to comment on this, and I got one more small point after this, and we've got to shut this down, but weather, strong cold fronts will and you touched on it a little bit just to, in the beginning of the podcast, here today, gone tomorrow. But, you know, I like in the past when I've been successful is just a couple of, you know, weaker cold fronts that come through in September. It seems to push them in. But if you ever have a strong cold front, man, they what you have may be gone. They're going to ride that wind.
I would rather have light north winds on our front and not have the monster cold ones. If we're going to have a monster front, I want it to be before season starts because we don't know how those birds are going to act.
That's exactly right.
No idea, and I don't care what anybody says. You can make an educated guess or an educated decision on where to hunt and how to hunt. But even during regular season, I hate when we have big fronts at night. I want a front to hit in the daytime. That way I can go scout and see and put my eyes on something after the front has actually hit to see how it's affected my birds. You know, those fronts that come through at night, you know, you don't know what those birds are going to do, what it's going to affect them. And a lot of the times what we do is we go to big water. You know, unless we've got a small pocket of birds that have been, you know, for a day or two that we may have not hunted, that we're going to just roll the dice that they're going to, you know, not move off that food source, is we're going to probably take all our guys and go to the biggest water that we have. You know, if we're going to say we're running five hunts, instead of, you know, a couple guys being on big water, a couple guys being on small water, we're going to take everybody and go get on our five biggest bodies of water, throw big spreads, throw a bunch of mojos, and roll our dice that way, because those birds that are migrating down are looking for water. And I hate to word it like this, but you're basically going, we're going to run traffic. I know on big water, any birds that's coming over is going to come give us a look, and we're going to be able to hunt. Sometimes it backfires on us, sometimes it doesn't, but more times than not, that's the direction that we're going to head, or we're going to get around a roost. We may have one guy say, hey, we're going to hunt. Because during teal season, there's really no roost. Not there are, but they don't play as big of a role as they do during, you know, regular season when the geese show up and all that. And so we may have one guy go get on what we would call a roost, because it's a rooster in regular season, and have guys hunting around that. And we're basically going to where, okay, this is the, you know, a pond that these birds have used for 20 years. We know on a migration the birds are coming here first. And then from once they find the roost, then they're going to break from there to go find their food source around it. And so all of that has to go into consideration when we're sitting around the round table at night and we're like, man, we got a front to deal with, you know, that's blowing in at 1 o'clock in the morning. Okay, guys, you know, so and such roost, you know, is historically one of the biggest roost in the county. We're going to go have one guy on it. We're going to scatter out around it. We're going to roll the dice that way.
Well, hey, and I'll leave you with this one, and I'm sure Daniel, it's great information, Daniel. We'll close with this one, but I don't know how to stress the importance of, man, wearing some boots that, I'm not going to say wear, you know, because most of you guys are going to be wearing hip waders, but wearing some boots that be aware of the snakes, but also not only snakes, but man, the mosquitoes are going to be bad. You need some kind of off or thermosel or something with you while you're hunting this time of the year.
Well, see, and we usually bring Bison with us to spray all our blinds the morning of the hunt. We bring our mosquito foggers. It doesn't get them all, but it definitely cuts it down a lot. My guys started doing it last season, and it made a huge difference on the amount of the enjoyability of the hunt. I don't know if enjoyability is a word, I just made it up, but the clients were able to enjoy the hunt more because they were actually getting to watch the birds work instead of swatting mosquitoes and then just grabbing their dinner, you know, as we yell, take them. You know, it's those little things like that that, oh man, we'll just put off on. Yeah, we still put off on as well. But man, I think foggers are like $80. You're hunting with 3 or 4 buddies anyway. That's $15-$20 a person. Get a fogger, take it with you, and see how much more you get to enjoy that hunt.
Oh man. Well, I think that we gave some great information today. Daniel, like I said, I don't think there's anybody out there better to talk about teal hunting blue wingtail hunting, especially, than you. I appreciate you taking the time because I know you're busy trying to get things ready for teal season. I thank you for taking a few minutes out of your day to join us.
You're welcome, man. I appreciate it. Look forward to those migration reports coming out about a month or so.
All right, Bubba. Well, thank you again. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
Ladies and gentlemen.